Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Well, here we are, and good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense, news and stories and words to live by from a somewhat friendly curmudgeon on Lake Wissota who's just a little bit under the weather still, but we're getting there. It's Thursday, September 15th. Coffee's ready, but more importantly, the tissue box is still handy, so we should be good to go. Luke Mathers is our producer. Coming up this morning, State Treasurer Sarah Godlewski. We will hear from Carrie Schumann, Executive Director of Wisconsin Conservation Voters, and political analyst Joe Zepecki will help us break down the new Marquette poll that shows, surprise, 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 elections in Wisconsin are close. Though I do have to say off the top, the tightening of the race between Senator Ron Johnson and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes isn't a surprise. Barnes was coming off a primary victory last month, so that bounce was sure to pull back. But it was helped by what can be charitably described as a Willie Horton style of campaign ads, painting Mandela Barnes as quote unquote different. I mean, honestly, it's as if somebody sat down and said, what kind of an ad can I write that'll make people think it was designed by Kyle Rittenhouse? Because that's the tone these ads have. I mean, I saw another new one on the internet today while surfing around, and every one of them has the two different features. And I quite literally mean black and white. I mean people who don't look white, and I mean white people who look either scared or angry. The stock footage is amazing. It's telling, and it's also depressing that people, you know, fall for this. And we're going to talk about this in the Marquette poll. The difference between people who see crime as a big issue in this campaign, and yet in the very same poll, in another question, say crime is not a concern for them. They feel safe doing their daily activities. And I mean, that you're telling on yourself when you then say crime is a big issue. If everybody is saying crime is not an issue where they are, but you think it's an issue someplace else, you're being scared intentionally and you're falling for it. But we'll have more to say about that with Joe Zepecki. Cardinals beat the Brewers 4-1. The Brewers had 10 hits and 4 walks and just 1 run on a sack fly. They left 12 runners on base, which leads to this story about marrying somebody who is not a sports fan by any stretch of the imagination. But Sherry has really come around on baseball and actually enjoys having it on in the background. She thinks it's, you know, some nice soothing white noise from a quiet game. And she has picked up a little bit of the lingo here and there, or at least the strategy, to the point where if she were watching last night's game instead of working, she would have said a few different times, "Oh, they abandoned those runners." And I'd say, "No, honey, it's called the runners were left on base or the runners were stranded." And she'd say, "Oh, no, they were abandoned." And you look at a game like this last night and there was just abandonment like crazy. I mean, Corbin Burnes gave you 7 innings and allowed 3 runs. Not bad. But when you don't get any run support in return, this is what's going to happen. You're going to lose games 4-1. So they are off today. They come home from St. Louis. They will have a 3-game homestand against the New York Yankees and then 3 more at home against the New York Mets. How do I know Luke Mathers didn't watch any of this? Because his microphone is currently 6 feet away and he wants no part of this discussion where I once again criticize his favorite sports team.
It was volleyball. And wait, we're talking about the Milwaukee
that's
Bucks
right.
now?
It was volleyball.
It was volleyball night, so I was not watching the game. But you're not, I mean, I do love the Brewers. By far the most like in-person live games I've ever seen in my life. I grew up not too far from Miller Park as I knew it, now American Family Field. And I love the crew. And I checked in on the game when I was on my phone last night, and it was a little rough to see. Like you said, Burnes is not doing a terrible job on the mound.
No.
When he's him and Woodruff are the highlights of the season still. Mm-hmm. And when you can only get one run with that many hits, it is reckless abandon. That's yeah. what it is.
And this is a team that can swing. They swing for the fences. And so that's all good. But yeah, I managed to watch a lot of it because I was doing something I don't do very often. Sometimes I'll just iron a shirt as I need it. It's very rare that I'll iron several at once, but I still felt like garbage last night. And for some reason, that was like the only thing I could think of to do was I can just stand in one place, get all these shirts ironed, watch the ball game, and put them away. I was a zombie, just an absolute zombie.
Well, now my question would be, did the Coke Dreamland Robitussin flavor real help like get you perked up, or was the, did that not make an appearance?
You know, the Coke Dreamland just has not made it back to the Kreitler refrigerator yet, despite tasting like cough medicine. And actually, what I'm using cough drops instead. I'm a big fan of the cherry flavored ones from what is it, Luden's or whatever. And then there's a Mucinex nasal spray that really helps, so I don't sound completely like there's a clothespin over my nose. And then just a ton of tissues and things, and you know, just keep pumping fluids, and you know, you just wait for this thing to pass. I woke up this morning wondering if maybe I had some chills, because it was pretty cold in the house, and I thought I'd you know, closed or at least partially closed most of the windows. It's getting to be that time of year, but there was like a breeze coming through the house. And once I came out to the living room, that's when I realized that I had left the window to the guest bedroom wide open. So it was you're seeing a flannel shirt on me on the video feed today. It isn't a fleece, but it was pretty darn close. We should have Joe Zepecki coming up later this hour. Let's take a break. You're up north. We weren't sure where Luke was going to go with the tunes when Joe Zepecki simply said just some wake me up music. So wake me up before you go talk to Joe Zepecki and talk about the Marquette poll. Good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. Wait, there was a poll that was released yesterday?
Yes, there was. There was a whole new poll.
How could you miss that in Wisconsin? Really feels like it's hanging from every branch of the tree and, you know, around every corner. It's really all the mainstream journalists seem to care about in Wisconsin, isn't it?
Well, you look for the things, that are predictable and, you know, things that are stable. You know, there's a poll coming. It appears to have some validity. I'm not going to trash the poll by any stretch. I'm just going to say it's a poll, you know, and it's what, 801 registered voters. So, I mean, your margin of error is 4.3%, which seems a little high, but again, it's a snapshot in time. Here's the thing that stood out for me. We'll get to the big numbers in just a moment, but when you say like, everybody knows there's a poll coming, everybody knows there's an election, everybody knows elections are close. And yet, even after all this time, the number's no longer in the 30s, but even after all this time, still 14% of people polled do not know enough about Ron Johnson to know if they have a good or bad opinion about him. It's still 14% of the people. That's insane to me.
Not to me. We'll get into it. I feel like we have to rib our friends in the mainstream media. We can add another certainty to life. Death, taxes, and the Marquette Law School poll will be A1 of the USA Today Gannett newspaper network.
Who had it before then? Up in De Pere, St. Norbert, didn't they? Yes. They were the ones that they were like the one Wisconsin poll. And now there's basically just this one. And if people go, why is there only just one poll? What you and I know, and only a few people that get involved in these kinds of things. Polls are damn expensive.
They're expensive. It takes a lot of hours of labor to make the calls.
As fewer people answer their phone than they're used to.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just, you know, it always just strikes me as funny because let's be real. At the end of the day, what the Marquette Law School poll is a snapshot of how people felt about things last week in a business that's all about today and next week, or in this case, this coming November.
Oh, yeah. And in looking at yesterday's numbers, of course, they're comparing them to August, and then they're comparing them to the previous one in June. But June was a lifetime ago, you know, in politics, when so many fewer people knew who Mandela Barnes was, for example, much less knew that he was the lieutenant governor. So then he wins the primary in August, and so his name is everywhere, and so he gets a bit of a bounce. Now that bounce, you know, kind of comes back to earth as things do. And as I said in the show open, I mean, that part was inevitable. But the other reason that the two of them, Mandela Barnes and Ron Johnson, are in a statistical tie right now is that Ron Johnson and his allies have just been carpet bombing with what I would charitably call a Willie Horton style of campaign ads.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I'd go that far.
You don't have to. I will. You
know, yeah, that's okay. I mean, listen, this ain't beanbag.
Right.
One of the differences that's sort of stood out to me is the reaction to this is Barnes is, you know, maybe doing the stiff upper lip tribute to the Queen, the late Queen, and you know, taking it. He's out there responding and reacting in good faith with Wisconsin voters. And on the other side, you've got Tim Michaels throwing a temper tantrum, which I wrote about for Up North News last week. Mm-hmm. Tone matters. How, you know, people running for high leadership positions react to kind of the thrust and parry, the back and forth of our politics, says a lot about the kind of leaders that they're going to be. And first of all, I'll just tip my cap. It is not an easy thing to have millions of dollars spent on outright lies about you.
Oh, don't I know it.
Is bearing that burden well. And so we should all sort of have a measure of gratitude for him.
Okay, yes. And also, few people will forgive John Kerry for pulling the same thing when the Swift Boat ads were just pummeling him. And again, we don't know where the line is, but at some point you can carry that stiff upper lip thing through too far if you're not fighting back. And I'm not asking him to be, you know, John Fetterman, you know, taking easy pot shots at Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania. But, you know, there's definitely voices out there saying, you know, Mandela's not taking the bait, and that's fine. But does he risk becoming complacent as a campaigner?
Well, I'll tell you what, when I look at the numbers that were released yesterday, when I hear about other numbers, I think the strategy that the Barnes campaign is executing is exactly right. You know, we did see some, like, in terms of the head-to-heads, I'm less interested in that. I'm more interested in what's kind of going on underneath the hood. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so one of the things that we still know is that in August, Senator Johnson's unfavorability was 47%, right? He was -9. Guess what it was in September? 47%, -8. When you've got an incumbent senator who is that unpopular, you have to present yourself as the alternative, as sort of a fresh face who meets a credibility threshold. I view what the Barnes campaign is doing as making clear that Barnes is up to the job, that his priorities will be different, that he'll go to Washington and fight for the middle class, as opposed to Johnson, who time after time votes for special interest hands out for his big donors and for the wealthy elites time and time again on issue after issue. And so you don't want to get down in the mud and wrestle with the pig. And why is that, Pat? Only the pig's going to like it. That's the way that Ron Johnson wins, is if he gets into a tit for tat back and forth, really nasty, negative back and forth. Barnes is doing what he needs to. He's on TV saying right into the camera to the people of Wisconsin, I'm not for defunding the police. This is nonsense. I'm going to go to Washington to fight for the middle class, make sure that law enforcement has the resources it needs. And more importantly, we're going to lift people up so that we stop crime before it happens. And whether it's that, whether it's cash bail, where Barnes has the same exact position as former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, no shrinking violet, and a former prosecutor for the U.S. Attorney's Office, they have the same position on this. I don't see Ron Johnson out there banging a drum against Chris Christie when it comes to, you know, keeping dangerous folks off the streets. So again, the fact that Barnes is kind of absorbing these attacks, telling the story that he wants to tell, and trying to keep this race on the trajectory it is, which is very, very close. And we always knew it was going to be close. I feel pretty good about where Mandela is. And I still say advantage Barnes in this race.
That's those are great points about what you how you handle an incumbent who, yeah, has such high unfavorability numbers. We should for those folks that haven't heard or done anything yet, do the top lines real quick. Among likely voters, it's Ron Johnson 49, Mandela Barnes 48. But like we said, the margin of error is 4.3, so it could be anywhere in there. Mm-hmm. And with Tony Evers 47 to Tim Michaels 44, again 3 points, well within the margin of error. So when talking about back to Barnes and Johnson and the favorability numbers, and you mentioned that big gap, you know, Ron Johnson's got a very high unfavorability number. And as I said, yet 14% of the people don't know enough about him to have an opinion. With Barnes, the number's 34%. One out of three voters still say they don't know enough about him to have an opinion, which, again, like to your point, tells me he's still got time and wiggle room to get his message to voters rather than have to play defense on all the garbage Johnson's putting out there.
No question. And listen, my tweet length review of yesterday's law school poll is this: partisanship is a heck of a drug. I think maybe the most interesting thing we learned yesterday is the degree to which on the issue of crime and public safety, even that issue is so riven by partisanship that what you think is actually influenced more by whether you consider yourself a Democrat or a Republican than it is by whether you feel safe walking down the street to get a cup of coffee in your own community.
That dichotomy is immense. You've got 61% overall saying crime is a major issue. 71% of Republicans say crime is a major issue. And yet, if you ask people if they feel safe going about their daily activities, it's 76% overall, 76% among Democrats, 75% among independents, 78% among Republicans. It's feel total safe. Projection.
Yeah. it's really remarkable. And so with partisanship driving so much, this is why we always knew this was going to be a really, really close race. Mm-hmm. I like looking under the hood, some of those underlying numbers, you know, in the Barnes-Johnson matchup, Barnes is still running ahead of Johnson on what I view as one of those key questions of does candidate X understand the problems of people like me? You know, does candidate Y share your values? On those underlying type of questions that are going to end up informing and influencing vote choice later, Barnes is in a very strong position. When you're in a 50-50 race, that's where you want to be. And what I would encourage all of your listeners is to remember, this is going to be a 50-50 race, which means there's no excuse for sitting it out. And absentee ballots are going to start dropping next week. Early vote is going to start in about a month. Check your local municipal clerk or make your plan to vote on election day. There's absolutely no excuse, no reason to sit out this election. And one of the reasons I would argue it's important to get your vote in absentee by mail early is that what we are ultimately talking about here is less than 200,000 Wisconsinites who are genuinely undecided in this race, right? I don't do math on the radio, but yesterday when I wasn't on the radio or on TV, I sat down with my calculator and I knocked it out. If you assume there's going to be about 2.7, 2.75 million votes cast in this fall's election, and you realize that all of these polls are spitting out 5% or less undecided, that's 200,000 people tops that don't know what they're going to do. The sooner, if you do know what you're going to do, you get that vote in, the more the Barnes campaign and the Democratic Party of Wisconsin and these other groups can focus on that last piece of the electorate who are trying to make up their minds. They track this stuff. We'll know whose votes are in. and they can be pretty accurate with where they're putting the advertising dollars. So do everybody a favor or make your own contribution go farther. Get that ballot in early.
We're talking to Joe Zepecki. We are focused mostly on the U.S. Senate race for the Marquette poll. We're going to talk about the race for governor between Governor Tony Evers and Republican Tim Michaels on the backside. We'll look at some of the issues on the poll as well and maybe hit a couple of other headlines before we wrap things up here on a Thursday morning here on Up North News. We'll be back.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
We're trying everything, man. We're trying coffee. We're trying rock and roll music, whatever it can do to get you going until the cough medicine kicks in. Joe Zepecki is back with us on a Thursday morning. Marquette poll was out for this month. We did the Senate race in the last segment on the gubernatorial side. Again, like we said, it's all within the margin of error. It's Wisconsin. It's a close race. This thing I did note, or the reporters who follow the poll noted, has been some backsliding in Governor Evers' favorability rating. And we have talked about the unfavorability rating of Ron Johnson. But even as we've talked about those things, Joe, you know, the fact that they never march in tandem with the overall number, with the top line number, tells you in all cases, well, I mean, with all things as a poll, don't read too much into anything. But I would imagine if you're on the Evers team, you look at that and say, okay, what does that mean for us? What do we do with our message, if anything?
Yeah, well, one of the other really important numbers is that the right direction, wrong track numbers in Wisconsin are getting better. When you're an incumbent governor, that's a pretty decent indicator, at least just in terms of directionally how things are going. Heading into the fall campaign, if you're a sitting chief executive, you want the right direction number to be improving. It is for Governor Evers. And I think maybe in a future week we should talk about is there's a lot of research out there and a lot of lit on the way that people view governors versus senators and kind of voting behaviors and the differences in those kinds of races. But, you know, Evers is still split, at least. He's 45% favorable, 45% unfavorable. That's a better position than Michaels finds himself, who is still what we call underwater. He's got more people disapproving, having an unfavorable opinion of him than having a favorable opinion, to the tune of 5 points. So he's upside down 34, 39. And the fact that, you know, on some of the, you know, the job approval and the unfavor are a little bit flopping around. Again, we're talking about a handful of people in a sample size of 800. The, you know, 44% approve of the job Evers is doing, 47% disapprove of the job Evers is doing. And then the vote is 47 for Evers and 44 for Michaels. And again, to your point, all of that well inside the margin of error, that race also going to be very, very close.
And in the, you know, among people, he understands the problems of ordinary people. You know, Evers has a 6-point advantage there, 47 to 41. In terms of specific issues, again, this number is not a surprise to pollsters. Wisconsin is a pro-choice state, but in asking people whether they agreed with and supported the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision that repealed the abortion protections in Roe v. Wade, 60 to 63% oppose, and that's across the way. Amongst Republicans, it's roughly 60-30, but again, that's still 30% of Republicans, you know, saying that they oppose it, along with 66%, 2 out of 3 independents, and 95% of Democrats. I guess what I'm getting at there, Joe, is that you talked about Michael's favorability numbers. I don't think they're going to be helped if this kind of public attention on women's health rights burns as intensely as I think it will now between now and November.
Yeah, I think that's 100% correct, and there's no margin of error on that 100%. The other thing that I thought was interesting is there is movement on both of those questions. They asked this in September, and they asked it in August. Okay, and so in August, you know, overturning Roe was 27 points underwater overall. In the most recent poll, it's 33 points underwater. So it means that the Dobbs decision to overturn Roe v. Wade is becoming even less popular overall amongst the electorate as people see more of these horrific stories about women needing to make, you know, different decisions about where they travel and how they travel and what happens. It's all of this is front and center in a way that it wasn't before that decision. Among independents, that crucial, you know, most likely to be among our 200,000, give or take, persuadable voters in these races, in August, it was 31 points underwater. In September, it was 38 points underwater. And so that middle part of the electorate, the more they see what the implications of the Dobbs decision are, the less popular that is. We know that in the governor's race, Michaels has the extreme, way out of touch position of supporting the 1849 law. We know that his charitable foundation has given money to organizations that are even more radical than the 1849 law, that would oppose any and all forms of common everyday contraception, like the birth control pill. And so even for voters who don't know where they're going yet, abortion is an issue that is going to remain front and center for the last 52 days of this election. And right now we know that Tim Michaels and Ron Johnson are way, way, way out of step with the vast majority of Wisconsin voters.
You see certainly on Twitter and other social media, the people who are armchair quarterbacks, media critics, what have you. But what you just said reminds me that one of the things that's being said out there is, has anybody asked Tim Michaels directly that if the legislature, which is going to be gerrymandered and likely controlled by Republicans, if they were to send you a bill that outlawed the pill, the birth control pill, would you sign it? And obviously, based on the positions he supports and the group supporting him, that's an honest question to ask.
Oh, it's a legitimate question. He should answer it. Maybe he will in the one debate that is upcoming. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that we saw was both times that Mr. Michaels went out there without a net and had an actual honest to goodness debate during the Republican primary, he got exposed. You know, talk about a guy who came in and, you know, bought the nomination. He ran an awful lot of 30-second ads, hadn't done, that I've seen, a single sort of long back and forth, any topic under the sun, give and take with journalists. He clearly doesn't want to stand on a stage with Governor Evers. We know that in just the last 2 weeks, he's been exposed for, as he travels around the state, saying the quiet part out loud. He was caught on tape saying, "I'm no expert on education." and of course not. He's not even an expert in the sense that any, you know, father or mother who sends their kids to Wisconsin schools is an expert.
Right.
Because it's never gone to a Wisconsin school. And so, you know, we need to learn more. We need to hear more from Mr. Michaels. And I think that we will. I think that, you know, our friends in the mainstream media will get out there and hopefully ask him very fair questions like the one you just offered.
I mentioned last month, and you could mention it every time, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but it is striking, and it is somewhat borderline depressing at the the huge split between the issues that Republicans rank as most important versus what Democrats rank as most important. To give people, you know, an idea here, you know, 71% of Democrats say climate is important. I don't even have the Republican number. It was so low, I didn't even write it down. Conversely, you know, crime for Republicans, you know, so much higher than Democrats. So you have to learn a lot by looking at the independent numbers and see where they stand on these things. And that again, I'm sorry to be kind of a negative Nancy on this, but the fact that 56% of independents say having an accurate vote count is important to them when we already have safe and accurate elections. You know, the fact that that even makes the list of top issues for independents is a little bit telling. And what it tells me, to be most blunt about it, is disinformation is real. It works. It's powerful.
Well, let's talk about the issue matrix, because I think it actually is about as good for Democrats as you could imagine 50 some days before an election. So let's look at the top five issues as identified by the Marquette Law School poll yesterday. Inflation is not as big a concern as it was in July. It's still down from that peak. And we know that the price of gas is coming down. The price of food is coming down. We're not there yet, but people are less concerned and things are moving in the right direction. Crime. We know that, as we talked about in the first segment, even that is highly polarized. It is Republican partisans who are driving that number. And I think what we've seen historically is Republicans are really prone to overplaying their hand on that issue. They don't do these ads in a subtle way, in a way that allows for nuance. And particularly for those last couple of 100,000 voters, that could make a difference. Democracy, the fact that people are concerned about the vote counts and the election integrity, like, I'm okay with all of that, because what we know is going to happen in the coming weeks is the January 6th committee is going to be back on Capitol Hill, driving the story about how President Trump and his allies tried to remain in power, tried to prevent the peaceful transition of power. We know that here in Wisconsin, Mr. Gabelman's disgraced election has finally been shuttered. So I'm happy to have that conversation and have that be in the mix. Public schools. We've got an education governor who has finally gotten Wisconsin back to 2/3 funding for our K-12 public schools versus Tim Michaels, who wants to defund those public schools and drive all that money to unaccountable voucher schools. Let's have that debate. Number four, gun violence. This is an issue where we know the middle of the electorate thinks that the Republican Party and the NRA have lost their minds and made it too easy for people who should not have firearms to get them. What do we have in Tim Michaels? We have a candidate who first didn't seem to understand what a red flag law was, and then said he would never support the implementation of a red flag law, which is how you, under a legal process, temporarily remove dangerous weapons from somebody who is having a tough time going through a mental health crisis. That is, has been demonstrated in other states to be good public policy. And then fifth and finally, abortion, which we just talked about in depth, so we won't rehash it. But if that's the five issues that these races are going to come down to, that this governor's race is going to come down to, I could not be happier about that issue matrix going into the closing 6-7 weeks of this race.
Your optimism is almost infectious. I mean, almost. If I ever run for anything again, and by the way, I'm never running for anything again, but you're my first choice for like a consultant or a manager or something. You've done more for me than any music that, you know, Luke could pick or anything that's in this coffee mug, whether it's coffee or not. That's saying a lot. Where do you get this from?
Well, I couldn't have done it without Luke's music. So thanks for getting me going this morning, Luke.
Okay. So we've got the one debate that's coming up, which, by the way, is one more than Derek Van Orden is willing to have with Brad Paff over in the 3rd Congressional District. He called Paff's invitation to debate a political stunt, which tells you all you need to know about what Republican legislative and congressional and other candidates, how they how they feel about debates these days.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a real trend that there's fewer and fewer debates. I was talking to somebody yesterday in like 2002, I think there were four debates. By 2014, we were down to two debates between Walker and Burke, and now we're apparently just going to have one in the Michaels-Evers race. It's not healthy for democracy.
And on a Friday night, and I've already done my rant about what TV stations have done, you know, trying to shove these things into a lower rated period instead of actually informing their viewers. But I'll do that rant another time with you. Joe, I think it stands for just optimism and energy. I will never forget this. Thank you so much.
You bet. Good seeing you.
All right. Take care. We'll be back to wrap up this hour's conversation after this. You're up north. We're going to talk for just a minute about the shamelessness of Michael Gableman costing taxpayers over $1 million for a sham investigation into the 2020 election and his little run-in with an advocacy journalist this past Friday night in Appleton. I believe it was a fundraising dinner for Tim Michaels, and it was Michael Gableman speaking there because, again, this former far-right state Supreme Court justice who then held a sham investigation and got fired for supporting Robin Voss's opponent, the Speaker of the Assembly, in a primary because Voss, of all people, wasn't right-wing enough for Gableman. Well, he had a run-in with this advocacy journalist at this dinner. Her name is Lauren Windsor. She has done this in some other instances as well, helping expose some of the things that Republicans and conservatives say when they think nobody is listening. And in this case, she hinted on that Friday night at this dinner in Appleton that she had been outed, that she had been recognized, and that she was being invited to come up on stage and ask her question, and that she went up and asked her question. She then said in the tweet that Gableman didn't really answer the question. They wanted her to leave the stage. She said, well, you did invite me up. Can I take a picture? So there's a picture of her up on stage with Gableman and with the local radio talk show host looking very unhappy in the background. And anyway, it wasn't until late yesterday that she finally posted the video clip. And again, it's her with either a cell phone or something else. So the audio isn't always great. So when like Michael Gableman turns away, I might tell you that I might jump in here, but, and there's no profanity in there, Luke, I promise you, except at the very end, I think at the very end, Gableman says, you know, off, thinking that he's off mic, you know, she goes past and he says something like, get the hell away from me or something like that. But that's it. Cause again, we're at this dinner where Michael Gableman, it's brought to his attention that this woman is there, probably recording him, and he thinks that he's going to somehow get the upper hand on this by calling attention to her and then saying, oh, well, look how polite we're treating you. And yet he never actually answers the question that got him found to be in contempt of court for refusing to produce records that a judge ordered him to produce. So with that set up, here is Lauren Windsor's audio of her encounter at that dinner with former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman.
Are you asking a question?
Yeah, I am. You said I could chime in, so.
Yeah, you have a question?
Yeah, I do, actually. But it's for Justice Gableman.
Okay, well, go ahead and ask.
Okay.
Lauren Windsor, who's one of these liberal trackers, worked with the Lincoln Project, did a secret hidden video to try to make Ron Johnson look bad, among other things. Just so everyone understands. Yes, your question.
So I was just wondering why. Yeah, sure. So I think you can hear me from here, but I'm happy to go up there if you'd like.
Well, come on.
Cool.
I thought she was pretty good.
Thanks.
Does that make America great hat you got on there?
It is, yeah.
Good for you.
Hi. It's so nice to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you. You'll have to tell me who fed you the question.
All right, so.
Oh, yeah, I just did some research. It's in the Wisconsin Examiner.
I'll hold it. I'll hold it. Go ahead.
Can I? You said I could hold it. No, I'm not going to hit you with it or anything. I'm not going to do anything.
I will hold it. Go right in.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So I just wanted to know, Justice Gableman, why it was that you failed to produce public records related to your investigation when they were ordered by the judges who sanctioned you?
Sure.
Well, we've never heard that question. It's very original.
Good. Well, let me.
But it's just not very transparent, is it?
What's your name?
My name's Lauren.
Lauren
Windsor. It's very nice to meet you.
Lauren, it's very nice.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys are so gracious. I really appreciate it.
And you know what?
Yeah.
She, I don't know about the rest of her, but she just spoke truth there. I can tell you that if I went to a Democrat meeting, and by the way, when I'm accused of being partisan, my answer is I will go to anyone who asks me to speak. But if I showed up, I promise you, I don't know how long you've been around, I would not be treated with one-tenth of the respect and civility that you...
Okay. Answer the question. Does he answer the question? Let's see. Does he answer the question? I'm so polite.
Probably take your seat. I'll take it from here.
Well, he invited me to the stage, so I was going to sit if the invitation is still valid.
Let him respond. Go ahead. You got a chair just for her.
The question was, why haven't I turned over documents? I said from the very beginning that I will turn over each and every document that works one way or the other. Anything that informs my report for it.
Yeah.
So...
I would love to see every piece of the report.
Anything that either supports or takes away from my report, in the same candor,
and I'll still tap dancing.
You go to the other sides of that, so you don't see the same kind of candor I just said. No way. I said from the very beginning that I didn't want to have anyone to have to take it on faith that just because Mike Gableman wrote it, it's true.
Third person alert.
I have turned over tens of thousands of documents. I turned over everything that went in
the zone
or that served as the basis, either for something positive or something that took away from the conclusions in the report.
And yet?
It's got to be close to 100,000 documents. So,
but.
Yeah, I was called in front of two. Oh, Lauren, you helped me raise a wonderful point. Out of everything that I just told you, okay, everything, only one person in this entire state has been called to testify in a courtroom, and that is me. For two.
I know you're a victim. Now back to the question.
This judge was questioning. Well, what about the notes you took at the Mike Lindell conference? Where are those? I said, well, I didn't talk about machines. They didn't influence my report. I saw no need to keep them. That's the kind of stuff. I want to know. Gee, Lauren, you seem to be an advocate of transparency. Is that so?
Yeah.
You are. Oh, she's for transparency. Then you will join me.
Let's mock the little lady. Call her little lady next.
In calling for the release of the information of the funders and managers of American Oversight. Do you know what American Oversight is?
Oh, geez. Okay, we'll bring it down from here since we're running short on time. The condescension to then say, do you know who American Oversight is? Yeah, it's the group, the real transparency group that brought a case against Michael Gableman for hiding records that he still hasn't produced. He ultimately never answered the question. He was trying so hard to try to make a spectacle of this, to look like he had the upper hand for exposing her. And to her great credit, she just kept pressing, saying, are you going to produce those documents? Why haven't you produced those documents? And she's eventually asked to leave the stage. So that was her confrontation to help us understand that Michael Gableman still not getting it done, wasting our money. You're up, North.